Welcome to the Hoopsite Podcast. My name is Alex Kennedy. Joining me today is a former NBA player who played for the Wizards, Knicks, Rockets, and Blazers. He spent some time as an NBA executive before becoming president of the esports organization Echo Fox. Now he just launched a podcast called Rookie Year, where he brings in professional athletes to discuss their first season in the league. The first episode is out now, featuring Al Harrington, so be sure to go stream that. My guest is the great Jared Jeffries. Jared, how are you, man?
Good, buddy. What's going on, man? How you been?
I'm great. Thank you for joining me. So I have to ask, before we get into the podcast, you are the busiest man. I feel like I just named out former NBA player, former executive, president of an esports organization, podcast host. You had a fishing TV show. Do you ever just relax?
Nah, man. I mean, I think that I just try to take advantage of it. I look around and I realize that sometime I'm going to be old. And when I get old, I want to have a bunch of stories to tell my grandkids, man.
Crazy. I mean, you are a hardworking dude, but I love this new venture you have. Obviously, I'm a big fan of podcasts. So I think it's really cool to see you kind of expanding and going into that industry now. For people that may be interested, the first episode is out now. Al Harrington, you talk about his entire rookie year, the vets that helped him. What is the podcast about, and what are some of the different things that you guys tackle when you talk about these rookie year episodes?
I mean, what I really try to tackle is just the trials and tribulations of being a rookie. I mean, there's honestly nothing easy about being a rookie in any professional sport, whether it's from MMA to beach volleyball to WNBA to NBA to NFL to Major League Baseball. They're all really, really tough sports. And I just want everyone to know that, like, how hard it is for players to be able to be good at those things.
I think one thing that you and I talked about before we started recording here is that I just feel like it's so tough when you're a rookie, especially if you're a top guy, you know, a top pick or a big hyped up prospect, because a lot of us have the, we're lucky enough to where we can grow as a person and develop and kind of go through all of our awkward stages behind the scenes and privately. Whereas some of these guys, you know, they're 18, 19, 20 years old and they're learning in front of the world, and everyone's kind of watching them grow up still. And some of them, you know, we see in Hollywood all the time, there's stars that are, you know, Hollywood childhood stars, essentially. In pro sports, it's not really much different. Do you kind of get into the off-the-court stuff as well in the episodes, where it's not just their on-court adjustment, but also everything to deal with off the floor?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and that's one of the big things that we try to do, is we try to talk about their... You know, I mean, off the court stuff is probably the most difficult thing to figure out. I mean, a lot of people have handlers and coaches and whatever on the court and tell you, like, you know, you got to work harder and you got to do this. But not very many people have someone off the court that can tell you how to figure it out, because no one around you has been drafted or been put at a professional sport when they're 18 years old.
For sure. One of the things that stood out to me when I was looking at the podcast and listening to the first episode was Al Harrington said that, you know, basically that rookie year, he discovered for the first time that he has to pay taxes. Can you kind of share that story? Because I think that's just, again, you know, a lot of times you're really young. He was a guy that came to the NBA straight out of high school. You're learning these things when you have a lot of money, which, again, it's a good problem to have, you know, having all this money and not knowing what to do with it. But what was that story? And do you think that's more common than people realize?
Oh, for sure. You know, everybody laughs at it and they look at it like athletes. But you take people that win the lottery out of nowhere. People win the lottery out of nowhere, they go through the same hard times. And a lot of times, those are adults that, you know, win those prizes.
Right.
I mean, look at it the same way. Look at it like, you know, your family works hard and they do their best. But then next thing you know, you're actually, you know, you're very wealthy or rich. And you have to, on the fly, figure it out. And you end up trusting a lot of people that everyone's like, well, why would they trust that person? And how do they lose that money? And what went on with this? Because you didn't know any better. Like, you literally are just throwing darts at a board and picking a guy that says he's good, but you can't vet him. You can't go ask your, you know, your uncle or your brother who handles their money. You're your first generation money, which is hard.
So how did Al discover about taxes? Was it his agent? Was it – how did he figure that out?
Antonio Davis.
Wow. See, I mean, that's the importance of vets, man. See, we always talk about, oh, it's so great to have a, you know, the right vets, and that's so important. But I don't think people on the outside realize just how much veterans are helping rookies with. I think they immediately go to the on-court stuff and everything. But so many of, I mean, I've heard so many stories of vets, you know, showing guys the ropes off the floor, buying guys their first suit, you know, helping them with different things. I mean, how important is it to have the right vets on a team? If there's a, you know, that was a big thing during the Philadelphia 76ers when they were doing the trust the process. Yeah, they were tanking and they were trying to bring in a bunch of guys to kind of audition them and see who would stick, but they didn't. There was some criticism that they didn't have the right veterans until they eventually brought in J.J. Redick and Amir Johnson and those guys. How important are those those veterans for rookies?
Well, veterans are just important, man, just because they're trying to win and get their next contract and their next deal. I think that a lot of times we do lose sight of it. It's a sport, yeah, but it's also a job. I mean, and when you have all these young players that everyone's going out there and they see it just as a game and just fun, like veterans bring an attitude like, nah, man, like let's go out here and get this money. Let's win games. Let's keep working towards a goal. And if you don't have guys that understand that and want that, then you end up in a situation where you're like, you're stuck. You end up in a situation where you're just rotating young players over and over and over again.
Right. So how did this idea come together? I don't think you have you done a podcast before? I'm not aware if you have done one.
No,
you
no,
have 60
never have.
Other jobs, but not podcast host until now. But how did this all come together then? And what was your setup?
You know what, man? It was actually Tim Conley. Tim was one of my best friends, and Tim kind of came out and he was like, yo, wouldn't this be a great idea? And we kept walking through, you know, different people. And then we said, like, there are a lot of podcasts that focus on just stars and focus on, you know, politics, different things, because how cool would it be to, you know, keep going and keep expanding and just talk about one dynamic of a person's career? And we kind of came up with this, and it was a lot of fun because no matter what sport it is, a lot of the things are very similar. You know, you go through the financial part of it. You go through the loneliness of it. You know, being a rookie is lonely because to that point in basketball, you always are a very close-knit team in high school, a very close-knit team in college. And then when you get to the pros, you're all individual men that have your own lives and sometimes families and kids. And now you're a 18, 20-year-old kid that doesn't have that. And it's like, all right, well, you know, how do you feel the rest of your day when you practice and work out for 6 hours a day?
Right. That was one of the big things that I've always heard when I talk to guys about that rookie year, just adjusting to filling that time. And, you know, you're basically alone a lot. And yeah, you know, some guys play video games, some guys find different things, but that is an adjustment in of itself. That can be tough, but I'm so excited to listen to the episodes that are coming up. You know, obviously you dropped the Al Harrington episode, which is great. You have Tony Gonzalez coming on, Corey Brewer, Chael Sonnen. I mean, you have what an amazing lineup to launch this podcast with. Who were some, I know you've recorded some of them already. You know, what were some of your favorite conversations you had? And, you know, what were some of the, for people that are going to be subscribing to this and looking forward to these episodes, what are some things they can look forward to?
I mean, Sue Bird, I got to know her. She last year worked with Denver, and I got to know through my connections with Tim to get to know Sue. I mean, and what an amazing, amazing, amazing person. Gabrielle Reese was my first time. We have mutual friends, but it was my first time really getting a chance to talk to her. And kind of her story and her family and her husband. And like, so those two, and especially with me having daughters, to have such empowered, amazing women on the show was big time for me. Willie Rofe is hilarious. I saw him one time in Mexico and me and him kicked it. The guy's an absolute maniac. So it was fun to talk to him again. Dave Stewart was another really good one because my dad was a big baseball fan. And I followed Dave his whole career. So a lot of them, man, I look for people. Dave Winfield, like I said, once again, because my dad was a huge baseball fan, being able to have Dave on just because, you know, the background story, what these guys have been able to accomplish.
Yeah, I love the setup here. I feel like not only is it a great idea, but the fact that you have – a former player, someone that's been in that position and yourself that's asking the questions and kind of guiding the conversation, I think that's so great. You can kind of offer your own experience and talk about kind of what you went through. And I just feel like when a player is talking to another player, when it's two professional athletes, there's that bond and that connection that doesn't always exist when it's an interview that's not between two players. So I feel like it just, you know, it brings something different to the table. So I'm really excited. Everyone that wants to listen to it, I would say go search the rookie year. Don't search the rookie year, just rookie year if you want to find it. Because I was trying to look for it and I had some trouble. So if you're not finding it, just search rookie year, but it's available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, anywhere that you can listen to podcasts. You can check this out. And the first episode is online now. I want to ask about your rookie year with the Washington Wizards. Yep. Were there certain things that stood out to you? What were the biggest things that you had to learn on and off the floor as you kind of made that transition yourself?
I mean, it was just different, man, because I came in when they were actual, like, they were like grown men. Like, these guys weren't kids. They were kind of your peers, but not really your peers. You know, I had Charles Oakley, Brian Russell, Christian Laettner, Jahadi White, Michael Jordan, Jerry Stackhouse, Chris Whitney, and like Patrick Ewing was my assistant coach. Doug Collins was the head coach. You know, back then you only had like five coaches. Like you only had, now you see teams travel, and a lot of teams, they'll travel with, you know, you call it, man, 13 coaches. Yeah. So essentially every player has someone to work with them. Our team had like five coaches. So you had to figure it out yourself. And then you have veteran guys that, you know, were hard on you because they were men. Like, they weren't 20-year-old kids. I mean, the youngest guys on the team were me, Brendan Haywood, and Kwame Brown. I think the rest of the guys on that team were all almost in their 30s.
Wow, yeah. I've always find it interesting when I have guys in the podcast, and we've talked about their rookie year sometimes. When I had Deshaun Stevenson on, he also had Russell in Utah and was talking about, you know, being around John Stockton and Karl Malone and all these different guys, and, you know, they basically were frustrated that he was there because they want to win a championship and he's this high school kid, and he felt like, you know, he was kind of butting heads with them through a lot of the year, and they were really hard on him and hazed him a lot. So he had a really difficult time. Trevor Booker, when he was on the podcast recently, told the crazy stories from Washington that first year. I feel like a lot of guys have, you know, a pretty tough rookie year, and a lot of times they don't talk about it because, you know, you don't want that out in the media and you don't want to throw your teammates and coaches under the bus. But do you feel like, you know, do a lot of guys kind of struggle during that first year?
Not anymore. The NBA has cleaned that up a lot, for right or for wrong. I'm not sure which one yet. But I mean, they've really kind of cleaned that up, man. Just because they didn't want guys to go through it, because they would hear the stories of how much guys were going through and what was being done to them. So, I think the guys you just mentioned, they had long, fulfilling careers like myself. So it might have been a good thing, because it taught you. Like, it taught you a level of respect, and it taught you how you were supposed to carry something, what you were supposed to do.
For sure, yeah. So I just mentioned, you know, Trevor Booker, obviously he goes to the Wizards 2010, and he was kind of talking about, you know, the clip went viral. I was super shocked. We kind of trimmed it and put a video out there, but he was saying, yeah, you know, we had one guy crap another guy's shoe, one guy cut up another guy's suit. We got teammates fighting outside of nightclubs. It went on and on. He was like, we'd break into each other's hotel rooms and tie each other up, doing pranks left and right. I mean, it was a wild year. But the more I kind of heard, after that clip kind of blew up, I heard from a lot of people that were with the Wizards that were like, yeah, man, this is just how it is with the Wizards. You obviously, as you mentioned, was a rookie of the, you know, on the Wizards, but it was 8 years earlier. Did you have a crazy experience, or was it just those Wizards teams later on?
It was those Wizards teams later on because of the culture that Gilbert did, man.
Like, right.
Gilbert was such a maniac that he created this culture that I think, you know, that's really stuck there for a long time. Like, it stuck there in Washington for a really, really long time. And I mean, in 2010, I don't even think Gilbert was still there. I think Gilbert was actually gone by then.
Yeah, I think he was there half the year. He was there for part of Trevor's rookie year, I believe.
Yeah.
But that was it. It was, yeah, I mean, but you could tell. I mean, he definitely, the impact from Gilbert's time there continued on for a while. I mean, and even you talk to guys like John Wall and Bradley Beal, there was some of that sense when they came into the league and kind of had to, I think they basically had to dig their way out of that and climb out of that hole. Because yeah, not only did you have Gilbert there, but you know, it was Nick Young, JaVale McGee, Andre Blatch. There were a lot of guys that were very young and somewhat immature, and it was just those teams with Gilbert were really interesting. They were very good, you know, especially with Caron and Anton Jameson and all that. But yeah, Gilbert is an interesting dude. He has a unique effect on teams.
Yeah, no, I mean, and it was one of those things too, that if you had guys on the roster that could control Gilbert, if you had like a Larry Hughes on the roster that could control Gilbert, he was a much different player.
Right.
But if he was like the focal point of the team and wasn't a guy that could control him, it did, man. It really hurt him and affected him in a negative way.
Yeah, for sure. That's so interesting. His stint, man, he was a phenomenal player. But yeah, I mean, I think it was funny. Trevor was saying, he was like, yeah, I thought the NBA was just insane. And then I go to different organizations and I was like, oh, okay, good. I'm not crazy. He thought that was how every team was, like, that's all he really knew. So pretty wild.
Exactly. Exactly.
So, you had the chance to play with Michael Jordan, which, I mean, obviously it wasn't with the Chicago Bulls days, but he was in Washington, still a phenomenal player. What do you remember from, what were the biggest things for you from that experience? I mean, and it must have been crazy just off the floor too, because he was such a rock star at that point. It was like being with the Beatles, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, it was like that, but it was also one of the things, man, was just his work ethic. You know, it was, even at 40 years old, the fact that he was always in the gym, always working out, always lifting. We had a thing called Breakfast Club, to where, you know, you would go in the morning and you would work out and you would lift, you would lift weights with, the trainers and stuff at 8 o'clock in the morning. So no matter how late he was out or what he was doing, you know, he was always, you know, in the weight room working out, getting better as a person.
For sure. I've always had this conversation and thought that Michael Jordan in the social media age would be so different. You obviously spent a ton of time around him, but there's so many things that I think, because we didn't have every single, second by second updates of every single situation, and because, you know, he's not out there, he wasn't as accessible as guys today. So there's more mystery. There's like, you know, myths that, you know, you hear, but no one really knows if they're true or not. There's kind of, you know, it's confirmed, unconfirmed. People don't really know. Do you kind of think, how would Michael Jordan be different in the social media age? Do you think?
I mean, he would, you definitely have to curb. I think that camera phones really ruined the world, man.
Yeah.
Like, camera phones have done so many great things, but as far as the social aspect of people, it's ruined the world, because people are so scared now to be caught on video, something go viral, something be recorded. It's changed the world, and maybe in a good way, but I know that before camera phones, you know, you didn't have to worry about near as much, man, and you could have fun and be yourself. I think that a lot of times, even with like social media influencers, the personality that they put in the public is nowhere near what they are. So people think that this person is like this outgoing, fun person, but it's all acting. And then likewise, they think that this guy on social media is a mean, arrogant guy that nobody really likes. And that's not the case at all. Like, here's a really nice guy, but on social media, he's just not outgoing. So, you know, camera phones and social media have kind of shaped what we perceive people to be.
Yeah, I mean, you hear the stories from Jordan's days. You know, he was famously hard on teammates, whether it's in Chicago, you know, punching Steve Kerr. There's been tons of stories, even from his Wizards stints, where people said he was hard on guys like Kwame Brown and the other young guys. So I think the perception may shift a little bit. There was also talk that, you know, throughout his career at times, the media protected him and things like that from certain criticism, or they wouldn't let fights get out there. I think, you know, you look at today, like when Jimmy Butler had that face off against the starters, it was playing with the reserves with the Minnesota Timberwolves, and that became just this huge story and kind of became part of the legend of Jimmy Butler. Or Kobe Bryant yelling at his teammates about "you're soft as Charmin" and all that stuff. You know, there'd be so many examples of that with Jordan if social media had been around when he was playing. But
it would also hurt his legend, because now nothing sticks.
Oh right,
like,
for sure.
Like you think that it's the biggest headline right now, and you know, how are we gonna get around this, and what's gonna happen? And believe me, in 2 weeks, it's going to be a bigger headline that's going to drown that one out, and no one's going to care about it.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I think he could be very I think he could be at times when, you know, I've seen him talk to fans and, you know, has turned people down for autographs and stuff, too. So there'd be a lot of people putting that stuff out there, too. So it's just social media. Yeah, definitely has changed a lot of things. I think it's harder now to be someone like LeBron James in today's day and age where, like you said, there's camera phones everywhere and everyone's looking for you to slip up. And any little, you know, you could be talking to a fan and you have just signed autographs for 10,000 fans. And then one comes up and you say something the wrong way. And then that goes viral and you're the biggest jerk in the world. Like, you know, you have to be so careful nowadays. I think it's so hard for these guys that that are adjusting to life in the NBA now. And also, I mean, like you said, one thing, I mean, or like with your podcast, Rookie Year, one thing that guys are having to do now is answer for past social media mistakes, too. These guys have sometimes been on social media since they were, you know, 8, 9 years old, because now that's how long social media has been around. You know, now they've kind of grown up with social media. Do you think social media also makes things difficult for guys that are entering, you know, professional sports leagues as a rookie and now all of a sudden have to answer for things years ago or deal with that aspect of it, too?
Oh, for sure. And I think, you know, there has to be a statute of limitation on if you're a young kid and you make a mistake. Like, I'm no way condoning, you know, some of the things that have been said, but we've all been kids and said stupid things. Maybe not to that level because now it's, you know, it's public. But if they come out and they apologize about it and they say, hey, I was a dumb kid that said this, I'm so sorry. You know, at some point, man, we got to forgive them, man. Like, we all can't be whistleblowers and look down on everybody. Everyone makes mistakes.
Right. I think it depends on what was said. There's obviously levels, you know. It could be.
Yeah, yeah. There's definitely levels to it. And also, man, there's a level of ignorance in some people, man. Like, some people grow up in an environment to where they're not as educated as the world that reads it. And they might say something that in their culture, in their area, is accepted.
Right.
When they say it out, in the real world, it's not. So I see it both ways.
Yeah. And I mean, there's even times where, you know, society changes completely where, you know, you can look back 10 years ago and watch some comedies from that time, for example, and you hear a lot of words that aren't so cool to say today. So, you know, out of context, if you pull up a tweet and say, look what this guy said, you know, I'm trying to think. I mean, without saying it, but
dude, listen, dude, go back and watch All in the Family. All right,
right,
and go back and watch Archie Bunker. Archie Bunker wouldn't last two. They wouldn't even do a pilot episode of that back then, and it was one of the best TV shows in the world. It was hilarious.
Right,
but society changed so fast that like the Archie Bunkers of the world are, you know, they're antiquated. They're old. It's over.
Right. I'm not even saying like the hardcore stuff either. Like, there's terminology that changes. Like, you know, little person is now the preferred term, but that wasn't the case before. So, like, you know, I think context is definitely important. But yeah, I mean, I think society today, it's hard for people to. I think it almost discourages people from growing as a person. And even if you've done a complete 180 and you've bettered your life and you're much more open-minded and have completely changed your ways, there is that part of society, the cancel culture and all that, that will still shut you down. And I understand where they're coming from, because it's unfortunate that person ever had those ideas and that viewpoint, but you also want to promote growth in people and give people second chances. I think that's important too. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. Totally agree. But
so last thing on Michael Jordan, I want to ask one more thing here.
Yeah,
people
yeah.
talk about, oh, he fell off and he wasn't that good in Washington. And let's not talk about those years. But I mean, the guy averaged 20 plus points and he was still putting up monster numbers and playing well, had some incredible games. For people that may not know, I mean, you were around him all the time. For people that don't understand what level he was playing at, can you kind of put that in perspective? And, you know, he was still a phenomenal player, even if he wasn't the MJ that we saw from Chicago.
Yeah, I mean, you go back to that era of basketball and how many guys were putting up 20 points a game. And even now, I mean, you look around the league, if you're averaging 20 points a game, you're a pretty special player. Put it like this. He was like 25-5. That last year,
yeah.
Okay, at 40 years old, that's a max player right now, making $28 million, $30 million a year. Like, so if you want to say he's not that good or had a tough time, yeah, he wasn't the MJ that we were used to in Chicago, but he would have been his numbers and the minutes he played put him at a max contract.
Yeah, take the name off that jersey and just say that's a random guy and people are going nuts. It's just, yeah, for sure, yeah.
And I mean, that's exactly right.
To do that at 38 and 39, I mean, can you imagine? That's nuts to me. I mean, we're seeing that with LeBron now, too. LeBron's longevity is ridiculous, and I'm so blown away by that. I can't even imagine it.
No, I mean, LeBron is going to be such – I mean, the number that he's going to put up and what number he's already put up are just silly just because of – You know, he takes care of his body, like, and you see that if somebody takes their body serious and works out and does things right, you know, you need a little bit of luck to not ever have a major injury. But that guy, for the most part, man, has stayed so healthy and never had a major injury, man. It's been great.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, yeah, one last thing, too. When I had Etaan Thomas on the podcast, he was talking about how he saw people literally pass out or burst out in tears whenever they would see MJ. And, I mean, I think that's part of it too. Now with social media and you pull out your phone and you see LeBron talking to you, I think you feel like you know celebrities and know these athletes more. When you see Michael Jordan, that doesn't feel real. Did you see that kind of stuff too, where people would just freak out when they see him?
Oh, yeah. Nah, for sure, man. You know, I'll say this. I was around MJ, around a lot of other people. When Linsanity was going on in New York, I've never seen anybody like the reaction of Jeremy Lin here in New York
for that
short period. Like, for that short period of time, man, he was the biggest. Like, I've hung out with Leonardo DiCaprio. I've hung out with MJ. I've hung out with, like, Denzel Washington, like, big stars. The reaction that Jeremy Lin got during Linsanity was, like, nothing I'd ever seen.
That's incredible. Yeah, I mean, you look at the overseas reaction, too. I know when he's went over there for, like, shoe tours and things like that, it's been insane.
Oh, it's massive, dude. It's like he's a real, 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 real celebrity, dude.
Wow. So it's so funny. So I did whenever Jeremy was in college at Harvard, he was going through the pre-draft process, and I knew his agent really well, Roger Montgomery. So I did a big article on him and everything, and then we stayed close when he was in Golden State for his rookie year, and he was playing the G League some. We talked a lot and everything. So then when he went to the Knicks, you know, me and him had still, you know, been really close, and we were talking probably every couple of days, every other week, something like that. We were always texting and stuff. So when Linsanity happened, I mean, I was done. I thought he was really good and deserved reserve minutes, but no one saw that coming. But
no.
So whenever so the New York Knicks said, you're not doing any one-on-one interviews, we'll give you a press conference every game, but we're not doing anything one-on-one. Well, then Jeremy, because he's the sweetest guy on earth, reached out.
Yeah.
He was like, hey, you know, this guy's been a really good friend to me, and he's like been there since I was in college. Can I just do one more interview? So he did the interview with me. It was an amazing interview because he's super smart guy, just so funny and everything. It was a great interview, and I made the mistake of in the interview saying that it was a phone interview. So literally the next 3 or 4 days, my phone, people were getting my number randomly. Good Morning America reached out and they were like, hey, we saw that you talked to him on the phone. Do you have his number? Can you send me his number? And then it was right before All-Star Weekend in Orlando.
Yep.
And he was coming down to All-Star Weekend, obviously. And they were club promoters that were texting me. They're like, hey, Alex, just got your number from someone. I'll pay you $10,000 for Jeremy Lin's phone number if you could text it to me. And I was like, are you kidding me? So I told Jeremy about it, and he was like, dude, take the money. I'll change my number. Just like joking around. But yeah, that Linsanity craze was nuts.
No, it was nuts, man. It was so much fun. Like, it was absolutely like one of the coolest things that I've ever been a part of.
Yeah, that had it, man. You've been around for some of these amazing things. So wait, how did you hang out with Leo? That's amazing. Leonardo DiCaprio. How did that happen?
Just being around New York, we got a couple of mutual friends. One of my boys, Dave Spencer, knows him real well.
That's awesome. That's very cool.
Yeah.
So how are things in the esports world? Let's wrap up on that. I know, obviously, I mentioned you're the president of Echo Fox.
Yeah. No, we just sold the company. So that I just stepped away from. So now all I'm doing TV for the Wizards and the podcast. So
I left out TV for the Wizards, another job. That's amazing, man. So how's TV been? I know, I mean, obviously, I feel like you're someone that's great at that. You've always been able to break down the game so well, and broadcasting was always an obvious option for you. But how's that going?
It's going great, man. It's a lot of fun. They reached out to me and gave me the chance to do it, and I love it. I really do. I think that it's easier now that I'm a little bit older, because when I was first doing it, when I was younger, it was kind of tough. But now I'm a little bit older, a little more patient. It's a lot of fun.
For sure. So now that you're kind of stepping away from esports and you're not as involved with that, are you being able to watch more NBA games? Obviously, you're doing the Wizards games, but how much are you taking in more NBA than you were before? Because I know you were busy with the esports stuff, man.
Yeah, way, way more, man. I mean, obviously, with the hand that I had in with the Nuggets, I try to watch all of their games. And there's so many good young players in the league. Obviously, like Luka, Devin Booker. Who else do I really like? I like what Orlando's doing with their whole team down there.
Yeah.
And then even guys that I played with, like I still like watching all the Portland games because of Damian. I actually stopped watching all the Laker games just because many as I can because of LeBron and AD. So I mean, I watch a lot of basketball just still, man, because I'm still so passionate about it.
So I mentioned this in the intro, but you were in the Nuggets front office and you were, you know, kind of rising through the ranks and doing an amazing job. And, you know, we were talking about in the last time you came on the podcast, how it seemed like you would become a general manager someday. You were definitely on that track. And then, you know, leaving to go become the president of the esports organization, you kind of shifted your focus a bit. Now that that team has been sold, that organization has been sold, could you see yourself getting back into a front office at some point, or do you want to just stick to broadcasting?
No, I'd definitely get back in the front office, man. It has to be the right situation with the, you know, right organization. But, yeah, definitely, man, because I'll always love the game of basketball, and it's always been so good to me. So I always want to stay involved with it a little bit.
For sure. Then last thing here, I want to put you on the spot. Who is your pick to win the championship this year? Give me your NBA Finals matchup and who you have winning it all.
NBA Finals matchup will be Milwaukee and the Lakers, and the Lakers will win it in six.
I like it. Very cool. Well, I'm so excited to listen to your podcast, man. I'm excited to see the new episodes that are coming out. Is this going to be a long-term thing that you do? I know you kind of have season one planned right now, but are you going to keep it going and, you know, have even more people on the future?
Yeah, I am, man. I'm going to start rolling out season two here really soon. And then I'm also going to roll out another podcast called First Year, because there are so many people that have questions about, you know, the first year that you get into the workforce. I mean, you know, how did like take a bunch of different executives and, you know, people that maybe had internships or the first year they started their first company or do that. So I want to get with a lot of different tech and VC people and kind of walk them through the first year that they launched their company. So you can also get that side, but also.
Yeah, that's such a smart idea. Whenever we started talking about this, I was thinking, literally when I was talking about, you know, that rookie year is so interesting. I think anyone starting their career and entering the workforce, they have an interesting story to tell. And yeah, if you can get some of these CEOs and big names, that'd be really cool. I think it's a great idea. So definitely we'll keep an eye out for First Year. Definitely everyone subscribe to Rookie Year. Go check out that podcast. Yeah, thanks for joining me, man. This has been so much fun.
Appreciate it, man. I'll talk to you soon, okay?
Definitely. Thanks, man. If you guys want to listen to more episodes of the Hoopsite podcast, check us out on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, anywhere your favorite podcasts are found. And until next time, thanks for listening.